Lots of quarterbacks to talk about in Week 7. Tom Brady gets it done without Gronk. Trubisky's struggles continue. Cam Newton's impressive comeback in Philly. And what do the Jaguars do after benching Bortles? Plus, the Chiefs find a new identity on defense. Todd Gurley's MVP candidacy. And good Lord, Justin Tucker missed a PAT. It's all on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. This was Week 7, Sunday at least. And we have some blue chip teams sort of having big days here. We have a lot of quarterback talk today, Andy.
And kind of the start of the mid-season, wouldn't you say? Weeks 1 through 6, early season. Weeks 7 through 12, maybe 13, mid-season. And then you get late season December. So we're in the full thick of it. We know who teams are at this point and who they're starting to become.
Mid-season eve, I'd call it. I think that's kind of a fair way to do it. But we have a bunch of games to run through here. Let's start with an early game. I called it the rare 1 o'clock game for the Patriots. It was pointed out to me that it's not that rare. They play about half their games at 1 o'clock, which is fine. But the Patriots.
I thought that at the time, by the way, when you said that, I thought like, oh, you know, I think they do play a lot on. So I thought, don't be one of those guys. Don't be like the Twitter people.
No, I mean, look, they play. Only the Giants have played fewer 1 o'clock games than the Patriots over the last couple years. I'll look up that stat for the end of this talk. But let's talk about the actual game, a shootout in Chicago, a really weird game. We had special teams gaffes, special teams touchdowns, it was really all over the place. We want to start with Mitchell Trubisky, though. We talked about him a little bit on the Deep Dive show. Trubisky was really, I thought he was a total mess in this game.
Yeah, he's struggling. In fact, it's fair to say if he had played even up to his normal standard, which is a standard that needs to get higher overall, they would have won this game in Chicago. They gave up two touchdowns on special teams, which is killer when you're facing the Patriots. But the Bears had every chance to win this game. Trubisky just wasn't good enough. And it's not just the missed throws, which people could see. He's not seeing the field clearly right now, Gary. And what really concerns you are some of the throws that he leaves on the field. You know, open receivers get left on the field at times. That just happens. But if the guy is open within the context of the play design, that's where you have an issue. That's where you're actually leaving guys open on the field. And we're seeing play designs, very specific designs. We saw it last week against Miami, and we saw it a few times in this game today, where guys who are open within the context of the design, they're theoretically read number one, two, or three in the progression, he's not spotting them. So he had some great scrambles, that should be a part of his game. But that cannot be, we talk all the time about, that can't be your foundation as a quarterback. That you can't use it as a crutch. And right now, Mitchell Trubisky's using his legs as a crutch.
Yeah, I mean, even the ball is just coming out of his hand bad so often. He's throwing so many just ugly, wobbling passes. He actually, I think it might have saved him from two red zone interceptions. I think the ball was thrown so poorly and wobbly that it sort of bounced off the defender's chest. This is troublesome, though. It's supposed to be getting better at this point, and he seems to be regressing and regressing sharply at this point.
Yeah, and you know, people like you and me probably think that throwing the ball and then seeing the field are two separate things. One's a physical act, throwing the ball, and the other is a mental act, seeing the field. But there's an overlap there. And if you're uncomfortable seeing the field, I've never played. Mm-hmm. I played quarterback in junior high, actually, as you probably know. I was, quite good on the lightweight team. I was a pound
over,
those
games.
They let me play. Yeah, thank you. I was a game manager, to be honest with you. Everybody's a game manager in junior high. But, you know, as someone who hasn't played football, really, I would imagine if you're not seeing the field comfortably, it's hard to be your best version of a thrower. And unless you are an uber-talented raw thrower of the ball, a Brett Favre type where you can just where your arm is so good that you don't have to be right in every other area, you're going to have some bad throws, I would think. So get a guy comfortable. Look at Jared Goff, for example. He is a better thrower of the ball now than he was as a rookie because he's so much more comfortable in the scheme. Trubisky right now is not comfortable, and he's not like 90 99% of QBs, he's not good enough physically to play when he's uncomfortable mentally.
Yeah, and I want to make clear, I'm not comparing Trubisky to the guy's name who I'm about to say right here, but I do want to lay it out as the extreme example of this. Tim Tebow. Remember Tim Tebow would have those SportsCenter bits where they'd do an update on him when he was a free agent, and it would be they'd show him doing his workouts, and he's just sort of, you know, he can stand there, he can throw the ball accurately. There was a receiver who played with Tebow in Denver who just kind of said, like, there's nothing wrong with him physically that he can't throw a football accurately. He is just so overwhelmed by what he's seeing, and he's unable to process it that he just has no idea what he's throwing to, basically. And that kind of feels like a shade of what you're seeing with Mitchell Trubisky right now. I called him Bortles North, and I won't back off that after today. I think he has a chance to get better, but this is frustrating. It really is. Yeah. It's getting worse.
Well, and to wrap it up, he and Bortles share an agent, for what that's worth.
Well, that agent's got his, he's got his work cut out for him. The Patriots, by the way, I just got to mention with the Patriots, I had wondered coming to the season, what's going to happen if Gronkowski is hurt? They don't have that. You know, we talked about 2 years ago when they didn't have Gronkowski for the Super Bowl run. They did have Martellus Bennett, so they didn't have to completely reinvent themselves stylistically when Gronkowski was out. They obviously don't have that guy now. However, you saw Josh Gordon, and he's getting more involved now. Obviously, Edelman is back, but they even lost Sony Michel in this game, and the offense still clicked pretty well.
Well, we've said Michel is a very good runner within the context of the scheme, and he is. That implies that theoretically you can fill in the next guy and still run your scheme fine. He might not be as good as Michel. It's Kenjon Barner in this case. But the offense will not change with his absence. The offense does change if Gronkowski's not in there. Josh Gordon, Gary, every week now we've seen a little bit more each game, just raw talent plays where he doesn't, and they're saying he's learned the system pretty well there. We'll see. But there are plays that he makes where you don't have to know the system. He's just better than everybody. And it's not just being big and fast. He's got a sense for how to play and how to track the ball and late hands. I heard it's a term you used the other day on our show. He can catch the ball with late hands and show his hands late, and defensive backs, it's hard on them. You can't defend guys that do that. So we're seeing that. The other thing that stands out with New England, the last thing, and this was a big part of this game, is they are so good at creating opportunities for James White in the passing game, and especially down in the red zone. And they do it by design, where they are getting James White matched up on guys in space, and they're totally destroying. Today it was Leonard Floyd was the victim of James White. They have gotten so good at that. And Gronkowski, when he's in, they're even better there, because White usually lines up on the weak side, the same side Gronkowski is on. And we're talking red zone now.
Yeah, James White is quite a weapon, and the offensive line did a really nice job today for the Patriots, too. I don't know how healthy Khalil Mack was in this game, but, boy, they really didn't get close to Brady. They got him on a clean blitz once, and that was kind of it.
Yeah, Bears defense is struggling. They need to tackle better. They didn't tackle well against Miami. They missed some tackles in this game again today. And there was a reactionary feel to it, which is what you get when you're a zone defense and your pass rush doesn't get there. I don't think Khalil Mack's healthy right now. He's been invisible.
All right, most importantly, I gotta give you this stat on the 1 o'clock game, since we already touched on it. This is Rene Bugner, who is an excellent follow on Twitter. Some of you might know him as Rainbow Cave. That's how I knew him for like 5 years. It's at RNBWCV. But he pointed out to me, 50% of their games, as far as the Patriots go, playing at 1 o'clock. Only the Giants have played fewer 1 o'clock games since 2013. So they don't play. I'm still sticking by my rare 1 o'clock game. Not that,
that
rare, but
shocked me that
relatively
Dallas,
rare.
Wouldn't you think Dallas would be the team that's played the fewest, because they play so many 4 o'clock games, as well as they always have the maximum 5 primetime games? I would have bet anything it would be Dallas has the fewest, the fewest 1 o'clock games.
I wonder if they might have gotten flexed out a couple times during that Kellen Moore year, and maybe they didn't get scheduled a lot after that. That's a good point,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
Renee, you're gonna have to double check that for us. Let's go down to Jacksonville for an even sadder quarterback story here. The Texans come in and they get the win in Jacksonville, and that's good for them. Deshaun Watson took the bus to Jacksonville, apparently took the 12-hour bus ride, according to Jay Glazer, to protect his lung. But they win it anyway. The offensive line does just enough. Texans jumped out to a 20-0 lead. But the headline in this game was Blake Bortles benched in favor of Cody Kessler. Bortles lost two fumbles in this game. One of them was absolutely ugly on a scramble deep in his own territory. I'm not sure. It's unclear what they are doing going forward at this point. But, gosh, both these guys look like really bad options right now.
Well, I've always said, you know, Blake Bortles is Mitchell Trubisky South, Gary, and I'm going to stick by that. What do you do with a Mitchell Trubisky South if you're benching him? Doug Marrone basically said it was a move to galvanize the offense, which would lift some of the culpability off of Bortles. I'm surprised Marrone – I don't know what else is he going to say. Have we ever heard a coach right after benching a QB, though – basically say, yeah, it wasn't all about the QB. I guess we have. I don't know. I just thought the whole thing was weird. When I heard he was benched, I thought, oh, my goodness, they're going to play Cody Kessler now. And I start looking up my Kessler notes. He's a timing and rhythm player, which is a nice way of saying he doesn't have a big arm. Mm-hmm. And then I hear what Marrone's saying. The whole thing just feels like Bortles will be back next week like this never happened. That's my gut feeling on this.
That's my sense. And it's kind of... I think it's the right move. I think it really is. I just look, Cody Kessler belongs in the NFL. I'm fine with that. But I mean, he's a low end number two quarterback. He just doesn't offer a whole lot of the ability to push the ball downfield or have any sort of like explosive presence in an offense. So you kind of get back to the Jaguars need to be dominant defensively again. They were better defensively in this game, as they should be against that Texans offensive line, but they weren't quite at the level they were a year ago. Jalen Ramsey's getting on the wrong side of the highlights a little too often here. But, I don't know. If the defense gets going and the run game gets going, it makes it all a little easier to swallow some inconsistent quarterback play. And I guess it's just a question of, do you take the constant C-minus type of performance you get from a Cody Kessler, or do you want Bortles where occasionally you get a B-plus, A-minus type guy, and every once in a while you get an F?
Yeah, and that, see, this is why, this is what it means to be a run-based team and a defensive-oriented team, is you can, like exactly what you're saying, you can play around your quarterback then, you don't have to ask him to do certain things, but when you don't trust it, and this wasn't necessarily in this game, now we're talking Jacksonville and the bigger micro picture, October Jacksonville so far, all of October, when your defense has been up and down, you have to start asking different things of your QB. We talked about it with Blake Bortles North, Mitchell Trubisky. You start thinking differently, and then you start playing differently. And Bortles, he's been such a thinking man's mechanical passer. There's no question that his mechanics and his comfort level as he sees the field, there's a huge overlap there, which is why he's such a streaky player. To answer your question, Gary, I think I take the A and the B Bortles with the understanding that sometimes you're going to get an F. I take that versus finding me a C-minus, maybe even D-plus type of guy if we're talking starter expectations. That's what Cody Kessler would give you. Let's remember this part, too. Jacksonville does not have a great running game. We think they do because they drafted Fournette high. He's been hurt. Now it's Carlos Hyde coming in. He didn't play today, but he'll be the guy next week. They don't have an overpowering offensive line. It's better than a year ago, but it does not win you games week in and week out. So you do have to get something from your QB, which means the talent at quarterback matters.
Yeah, and they will have to figure it out as they head to London for the early kickoff, the 9:30 kickoff against the Eagles next Sunday. This is those are a couple teams sort of trying times here. We'll get to the Eagles a little bit later in the show. Before we move on here, a lot of people out there would like to get into the stock market, but maybe it seems a bit overwhelming. Well, we have a solution. Robinhood, the investing app that gives you a non-intimidating way for stock market newcomers to invest for the first time with true confidence. Other brokerages charge up to $10 for every trade, but Robinhood doesn't charge commission fees. Trade stocks and keep all of your profits. Robinhood has easy to understand charts and market data place. Robinhood has easy to understand charts and market data. Place a trade in just 4 taps on your smartphone. Robinhood is giving our listeners a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help you build your portfolio. Just sign up at 10things.robinhood.com. That's 10things.robinhood.com. All right, Andy, let's go the Sunday nighter. Let's tell a happier quarterback story here. Chiefs just rolled up the Bengals here. And look, we've talked a ton about the Chiefs offense, and I think it was sort of more of the same. Kareem Hunt was a little bit superhuman in this game. But Chiefs defense, much, much better in this game.
And as Chris Collins was pointing out in the broadcast, they were a little bit more conservative in their approach. And I think there's a viable conversation to be had here. Is if you have a high-powered offense, is it better to try to be a big play defense and blitz a lot and play aggressive man coverage and disguise? Kind of think like the 2009 Saints. They were like that. They were very aggressive under Greg Williams, highs and lows defensively, playing opposite a high-powered offense. So in theory, if you get a turnover defensively, you really swing the game because it usually means 14-point lead or something because your offense will score. And if you give up a big play, well, it's not a big deal because your offense can get it back. That's the one thought. Or do you take the Patriots approach, another team that's got a high-powered offense and is putting up huge numbers right now? Nobody's talking about that, but New England's offense is dominant. It has been for a few years, and they go a bend-but-don't-break defense, thinking we're going to make you try to match us scoring-wise, and if we go bend-but-don't-break, it's going to take you too many snaps to do that. You're not going to be able to keep up. You punt once, you punt twice, and you're going to fall behind that way. What's the better approach? And it comes down to your personnel a little bit, but that raises the question, well, because Kansas City's got slightly below average personnel, I'd say, if you just go top to bottom on their defense. Mm-hmm. Now that raises the philosophical question. Okay, well, if we're a little below average, do we play bend but don't break and hope we don't shoot ourselves in the foot? Or do we go for broke and try to win with our scheme and hide our guys that way? And it's all just philosophy. I don't know if you have any strong opinions on it, but this is the kind of thing coaches and general managers, they have to figure this out.
I'd love to give you a non-answer on this and just sort of push the debate down the road even further. When I look at this Chiefs defense, let's just say the Chiefs want to be Patriots, basically the new Patriots with what they do offensively and defensively. The defense is just kind of built differently than what they have in New England. I think they have some really talented guys up front. Dee Ford, Chris Jones, at some point Justin Houston is back, but they're not so good on the back end, which is kind of the opposite of what the Patriots have. So, you know, they might have. I'm sure the Chiefs, like all of us, even though they were optimistic about Patrick Mahomes, I don't know if they expected to have this level of offensive success. I think they'd be crazy to expect, their first year quarterback to be doing this. So I wonder if they're just sort of recalibrating on the fly at this point and sort of having the kind of discussion that you and I are having right now.
Right, that's what I'm thinking too. We might see a subtle shift of approach because the Chiefs have been more of an aggressive defense than a passive defense, to fit them into terms of our conversation here. Bob Sutton, their coordinator, a few years ago, he was blitzing more than anyone in the NFL. Now, the last couple of years, he's rushed 3 and dropped 8 more than anyone. So that's a real big difference in philosophy. But what makes him still aggressive is they play a lot of man technique at cornerback. So you're still going one-on-one coverage in some areas versus zone and the help you get there. And we know how that goes. They've got Denver next week. And Denver seems like an offense. If I'm trying to find my identity defense, and maybe I'm rewriting who I am defensively, Denver's a nice offense to do that against because they're very traditional. They don't have a QB that will kill you. You have to watch Case Keenum's second reaction plays at times, but you don't have to fear him a whole lot. I think we're going to find out a lot about the Chiefs next week and how they approach the game at Denver. And my guess, Gary, is they're going to go a little bit more conservative like they did tonight.
Bengals, any thoughts about the Bengals? Just one of those nights for the Bengals. Bengals always seem to do this on in these primetime games. They seem to usually do this in primetime games.
Yeah, that's fair. I think the data backs that up. Here's a looming problem that the Bengals have, and I've been wondering, why aren't they playing more man coverage all season? And Dennard did not play in the game. Dark Rose Dennard. Is he Dennard or Dennard? His cousin went by Dennard years ago, and he goes by Dennard. Remember Alonzo? I think it was Alonzo.
For the
Patriots.
Alfonso Dennard for the
Alfonso
Dennard.
Thank you. Yeah, and he got in trouble, and he wound up out of the league. He was a real talented low-round pick. But anyway, they're cousins. They pronounce their names differently. Dennard or Dennard or whoever, he didn't play a whole lot, and he didn't play this game. He hasn't played the last couple of weeks with an injury. But when he's in, he gives them good man-to-man in the slot. Dre Kirkpatrick, William Jackson outside, they're good man-to-man defenders. And yet, when you put on the Bengals film, you see a lot of safe zone. They play the conservative approach. That's how Terrell Austin, their coordinator, he believes that. He makes you bleed them to death slowly, and I think it works for them more than it doesn't work for them. But here are their two issues that are up ahead. So I'm wondering why they don't play more man-to-man. They're not very good at linebacker, and they're not very fast. They're not good at linebacker for today's NFL. Perfect is a good zone awareness guy, and we know he's a downhill thumper in the run game, but he's not a rangy cover guy, and they don't have a lot of depth in that regard, so it's hard to play. We talked about teams like the Patriots and what they're doing with James White or Tariq Cohen, who faced the Patriots today. He was big in the passing game. Kareem Hunt, just look at the game they actually played tonight. Guys that can contribute in the passing game at running back, that's an issue for teams that don't have man-to-man linebackers. And the other thing with them is their four-man pass rush has done nothing the last few weeks.
Yeah.
And that is way too often the case. Carlos Dunlap, and it's more him than Geno Atkins, but those are two premium star players that just, especially in Dunlap's case, they disappear for long stretches.
I was going to say, I think that's been their problem. I think pass rush was playing up to up to their capability, we wouldn't be so baffled by the approach in the back end. But
Because the only way that approach can work is if your front four dictates the timing of the game. If your front four is forcing the QB to throw it quickly.
Yeah, let's go out to Washington, where this was actually a really fun game down the stretch here. This is Dallas at Washington. The Redskins hold on for a 20-17 victory. I'm gonna start with the Cowboys side of the ball, and then we're gonna do like 45 minutes on snap infractions. But if I'm a Cowboys fan, I thought this was another very encouraging week for Dak Prescott. Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, look, like every team, the Redskins wanted to take Elliott out of the game, and they did. Dak Prescott made enough plays to keep the Cowboys in this one. Cole Beasley had a couple of big catches down the stretch. They got some big plays from Michael Gallup, and I think you're looking at Michael Gallup as probably, certainly the most talented guy they have on the outside there. I don't know. I think this offense is comfortably trending up. They got a nice game from Sean Lee today too. So, This was, I know it's a loss, but I thought this was an encouraging day for the Cowboys.
And here's how I would argue the other way around is they had overall 22 runs for 73 yards. Prescott had 33 of those. So Ezekiel Elliott, he had 33 yards on 15 carries. Obviously, we know you want more than that, but in Dallas's case, and I know Washington, they loaded the box, they dialed in on him. But when you have a mobile quarterback, that you should be using that to create opportunities for your running game. We've always thought about you run the ball to set up the pass. Well, the NFL is a passing league now, so you actually pass the ball to set up the run in theory. Why wouldn't that be the case? And that's what we're going to talk to Rams in a minute, Gary, and that's what they do so well, and that's why Todd Gurley has been so effective. When you intertwine your running game and your passing game, you're not just helping your passing game, you're lending consistency 2-year running game. And Dak Prescott, as a threat, as a mobile guy every time, he should be holding the backside defenders and getting their respect and compelling them to not crash down on Elliott. So if you're always controlling the backside of the defense, your running back, if he's as good as Elliott and he's got his O-line in front of him, that O-line in Dallas, he should never be getting less than 70 yards in a game on the ground.
Yeah, I guess I was a little more pessimistic, Andy.
Well, let's just think. Look at it this way. What if I had come to you Saturday, the day before this game, and I had said, hey, Gary, Ezekiel Elliott's going to have 15 runs for 33 yards. His longest run's going to go 6 yards at Washington. How optimistic are you for the Cowboys if you're to apply that to a big picture? Never mind what they do in the passing game. Let's just leave it at that.
That would be a bad day. But I'm saying they figured out a way. They were right there.
And I'm saying I don't think that's to figure out a way implies that they've got something they can build on. Are they really going to build on a pass-first offense?
No, but I think a couple weeks ago we would have said that is a hopeless situation for them, and I think they're finding something of a passing game here to get it going, and a little bit more than last week when it was a lot of scramble yards for Dak Prescott.
That's fair. I understand what you're saying, and that's fair. If I'm not optimistic, if I'm a Cowboys fan, I mean, you lose on the road to a division rival, and you didn't do your main thing offensive. But I hear what you're saying. Who do they have? Who's on their schedule next?
Oh, now we're bringing up future schedule here. Let's see. They go to bye week.
They got a bye. Well, that's something to build on. There we go. Momentum heading into the bye. Gary Grambling's theory holds true.
There you go. And then they're home against Tennessee, at Philly, out at Atlanta, and they have a whole bunch more games this year. They're going to keep playing. Washington, speaking of winning games the way you want to win games, I mean, this is kind of their blueprint, and it's kind of a razor-thin margin, and they're playing on the right side of it right now. I mean, this is another game where they got a lead. Adrian Peterson had another impressive day. High volume, 99 yards on 24 carries. Defense played well, and I mean, gosh, Capry Bibbs was their leading receiver, 4 catches for 43 yards. That probably tells you everything you need to know about what this passing game is at this point. But they hang on in this one.
Adrian Peterson he's putting up numbers every single week. He is productive. He doesn't look like his old self. He won't ever again. His old self was maybe the best pure runner of his era, if we're saying his era begins after Barry Sanders. But he looks like a version of his old self still, and he's very what always made him great was he was so powerful off of his lateral movement. So he would go east and west, and then he could immediately thump you going north and south. You don't quite see that anymore because he doesn't have the same juice and control when he goes east and west. He takes longer to gather himself and get that downhill momentum going. But if you didn't know what he had before, if you just put him on and saw him now, you'd say, oh, this guy can, he's a great, powerful runner. But in today's game, he's not just a stiff power guy. He's got some, wiggle's the wrong word, but he can go east and west still a little bit. I've been really impressed with Adrian Peterson. He's giving them exactly what they need in the ground game.
Yeah, I think he's giving them pretty much close to what they would have gotten from Darius Geis this year if Geis had stayed healthy. I think he's been a real nice find for them. I think he's certainly been better than, judging from what we saw last year from Perine and Rob Kelly, he's been a lot better than those guys. And this has been a nice comeback year. And of course, the real story from this game was the snap infraction. Did you see the snap infraction, Andy? Do you have an opinion on the snap infraction?
I do not.
Okay. Well, to give everyone, I'm not sure how you could have missed this yesterday with all the talk last night about it, but
30 seconds. You got 30 seconds to do this, by the way. And it started at the beginning of me saying you got 30 seconds. Now you
No. Let me give the full history of the snap and how it came to be. No, this was Dallas was lined up for a 47-yard field goal that would have tied the game. They were Daron Payne on the Redskins defensive line came across. It looked like it was a neutral zone infraction. They ended up calling it a snap infraction on the Cowboys, which backed it up to a 52-yarder. We all watched the replay many times. No one could really see anything that would qualify as a snap infraction. It was just one of those things where, technically, yes, the ball moved slightly as LP Lattisaur was getting ready to snap the ball, and someone jumped, and that sort of forced the official's hand. So it was a 52-yarder instead of a 47 or a 42-yarder, and it hit the upright. So that was probably the butterfly effect and all that, but that might have been the difference in this one. Snap infraction.
Was that my full 30 seconds? Said, but yeah, back to original real football. There's something to be said for having a guy like Adrian Peterson with Alex Smith, a sustaining running back that can keep you on schedule. That'll help Smith. Sorry to bring it back to something we all care about.
I can't believe you don't care about the snap infraction. Let's go Rams at San Francisco. Rams keep rolling, and Andy's extra point column this week on the MMQB. You can read it right now if you wish, or you can listen to us talk about it. Todd Gurley and the MVP conversation, and this is more of a theoretical MVP conversation. We're not handicapping the race. Obviously, there are a lot of quarterbacks who are in the running right now, but is Todd Gurley an MVP candidate? Last December when we discussed this, you said you didn't think so.
No, I didn't think so last year because my theory was if you take Gurley out of the Rams lineup, the Rams' offensive approach would not change. They would not be as good offensively, but their overall approach, the stuff they run, the things they do, it wouldn't change. They would just do it with different guys. Because I don't think Gurley is I don't think he's one of the five most, I'm not supposed to say dynamic. Gary, what's the word I'm allowed to use instead of dynamic here so Chris Stone doesn't fire me? He doesn't create, though. He's a north-south runner. That's what I'm trying. And he's a great one. But he's not Le'Veon Bell or Joe Mixon, these guys that can dance and make their own space. So I didn't think that made him MVP worthy. Now, Sean McVay's counter-argument when I posed my theory to him, hey, Sean, let me tell you about Todd Gurley. His counter-argument was he's so good in the north and south stuff. And by the way, he thinks he is a little bit more dynamic than I do, of course. But he's so good in that north and south stuff that it changes the way you call plays because you're willing to call things more often, more backfield screens, more outside zone. You're able to not necessarily repeat plays, but repeat certain concepts because you want to get Gurley the ball on those concepts, and that's what forms an offensive identity. So eventually what happens is you build around that guy. And it was a really good explanation of how coaches think and how players influence coaches, and it's good coaching too when you think about it. It's not just, well, okay, he's not the most, there are other guys who are more laterally agile and explosive than him. Well, I wish we had those guys. That's not how it works. You say this guy is a really, really good hit it and go runner. How can we put him in position to do that? The Rams have done that. So I am more open to, because Mark Moravec, our editor, who was in on the banning me from using the word dynamic, he said to me, Gurley's in the MVP discussion again. I want you to watch the game and write about that. And so I did. I wouldn't have him as an MVP candidate right now, but I'm not against others who do this year.
Yeah, I mean, this year it's going to be a little bit different just because we have so many quarterbacks putting up big numbers, and quarterbacks tend to get that award for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I didn't know there were MVP discussions, by the way.
I didn't
either. Discussing MVP right now?
Moravec, you saw, did you? He emailed me and said, Gurley for MVP. What do you think?
I don't know.
Someone's out there discussing, I'm sure. But right now, though, is if they took the vote today, Patrick Mahomes probably gets that 50-0, doesn't he?
Yeah. Who else are we forgetting?
And I'm not saying he deserves that, by the way. Cause I think he's got room to improve. But
yes.
The way voters think right now, Patrick Mahomes is holy, and that's just how the voting would go.
Who would be second, Goff or Gurley?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking that too. That's what's interesting is Gurley and Goff might eat into each other's votes for who would be MVP. Is there anybody else that would be in the running for second?
You
Rogers?
Probably have to start talking Brady at this point.
Yeah, maybe Brady. I mean, I think you'd have to talk Rodgers, wouldn't you?
Oh, Breeze.
Given what he did.
We're forgetting about Breeze.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. All right.
Well,
anyway,
I guess
we got all season to figure this out.
Like 10 more weeks to discuss MVP. Anything else from Rams 49ers, Andy, that stuck out to you?
Just the one last thing would be the Niners. Last 2 weeks, offensive teams have come in game planning to attack them on the edges. The Packers did it a lot, big time. They did it with play-action rollouts on that Monday night game last week, among other things. The Rams, we know they do those jet sweeps a lot, but this week they were actually handing the ball in the jet sweep. San Francisco's defensive ends are very limited rushing the passer, and now I think teams feel, watching their tape, that they can be attacked by design in the running game. That's been a real issue for them this year.
All right. Before we move on, you know, I just want to mention something as far as the MVP discussion goes that Mark Moravec keeps talking about. before the season started on the MMQB gambling podcast, which comes out every Friday, we were talking up Patrick Mahomes at 33-1 for NFL MVP. Just imagine if you had mortgaged your house and put all of your money and savings on that bet. You'd be pretty happy right now. Please never do that, though. So please, if you don't already, subscribe to the MMQB podcast family. You'll get not only this show, you'll get the gambling show on Friday. Andy and I are back every Thursday with the Deep Dive podcast, where we preview the upcoming big games of the week. We also take some mailbag questions, and then the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. He roundtables it with Jenny Brentis and Connor Orr, three of our favorite people. You can't go wrong. It's four really good shows. Subscribe. Rate it on iTunes, too. Your life will be more fulfilled. Let's go, Drew Brees. MVP candidate Drew Brees. Let's officially brand him that. At Baltimore. I'll just start with this, Andy. Will you just never love a kicker again after what happened today?
That's funny you say that, because I did. I felt like my heart broke. I gave in a little bit. I let down my guard. I let Justin Tucker into our podcast. I gave him some love. And now here he is missing an extra point, which I hate that those are missable anyway. I think they should be automatic. And I think I do think I'll never love another kicker again. I'm going to go out and get a couple of cats now.
It really was crazy, and I appreciate. I use StatSync. We have the subscription there to look at all the box scores here, and they don't even have the heart. They usually put like, you know, it'll say like Will Lutz missed PAT or missed kick or whatever it was. They didn't even have the heart to put Justin Tucker's name on there. They just have missed kick. They couldn't. They couldn't compute that it was him. That was insane. That was the most shocking play. Second most shocking play after that Vikings touchdown against the Saints in the playoffs last year. But the Saints were on the right side of a shocker in this one. But this game was offense versus defense. Number one scoring offense, number one scoring defense. Saints end up getting the 24-23 victory. They had to grind it out, and they did. They made enough plays in this one. Breeze ends up throwing for 212. They get 134 on the ground. Lots of Taysom Hill in the second half, and they put together just enough timely plays here, and the defense had enough to contain the Ravens here.
This whole Taysom Hill thing, I am still not sure how I feel about it. When you, for one, I think he's a ball hog. Can you be a ball hog in football? Because there are times
with the read option stuff.
Yeah, Alvin Kamara should have had a 52-yard touchdown a few weeks ago, and there have been other cases this season where I felt like Taysom Hill. What's he do? Why is he out there? Because he's not actually reading anything. He's just keeping the ball at times, or he's predetermining what he's going to do. So I don't know. Hey, I'll have to watch him closer from this game. But as a broader concept, if I'm the Ravens, I love seeing the ball in Taysom Hill's hands instead of in Drew Brees' hands.
I will say they needed a couple of plays, and Hill delivered. They just need to sort of throw something different out there, because look, they weren't doing whatever they want against against the Ravens like they have against some other teams here. I'm still I'm with you. I'd still rather have Drew Brees taking a snap than Taysom Hill. But he had a when they were milking the clock late. He had a 2nd-and-8 run for a first down, stuff like that. So there were some good moments here.
I'm still feeling it out. Again, I'm not saying it stinks, but this is not the Lamar Jackson, Joe Flacco situation, because Breeze is much better than Flacco, and Lamar Jackson is much better than Taysom Hill. So it's not apples to apples. I just don't love the whole thing. I will say this, Gary. We've talked a lot about teams finding their identity and how Dallas should win and play and how they should feel about themselves. When you have such a carved-out identity like the Saints do, which is what happens when your head coach and your QB have been together for a decade plus, there's something to be said about winning a game when you're not able to fully maximize your identity. They didn't light it up through the air today, and they got out of there with a win. And I think sometimes that can be a really encouraging, good thing in the big picture moving forward is, hey, the Saints went in and won a fistfight on the road against the best defense in football today.
They did. And look, the one, by the way, Lamar Jackson scored a touchdown this game, first career touchdown, as we're talking about sort of the wildcat quarterbacks going in there. The one concern I have with the Saints is similar to what happened when they almost let the Browns come back and tie that game in week 2. They went way, way, way too soft protecting a lead in the fourth quarter here. They let Joe Flacco basically just you know, saunter down the field, 6 plays, 81 yards for that, what would have been game-tying touchdown if the Justin Tucker kick had gone through, like the previous 222 PATs he had attempted in his career.
Yeah, I'm surprised how many teams get too soft protecting. Nobody, remember years ago, everybody would talk about prevent defense, and pretty much any time a defense started giving up passes in the end of the game, people go, oh, you can't play prevent defense, even though 90% of people didn't actually know what a prevent defense was. Nobody talks about prevent defense anymore, but every week you see one or two teams on film that just give up too many yards and they're playing with the lead. And I admire the teams that continue to blitz and run their scheme. Pittsburgh's like that. They don't play a whole lot of prevent defense. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. You can't just let you can't let the clock try to make the clock be your 12th man. You don't want to do that very often.
At the very least, you have to have a multi-score lead. You can't be protecting a one-score lead and just sit back and let the Ravens go wherever they want. Let's go Carolina at Philadelphia. This, I think, was the most encouraging game of the day as far as if you're a fan of a certain team. Panthers down 17-0 going into the fourth quarter. This was a windy sort of a tough day for offense in Philadelphia, and they rally all the way back, 3 fourth-quarter touchdowns. It was a nice blend of creative play calling, and then Cam Newton just making a lot of big throws and sort of getting this thing going. So Newton ends up, you know, it was another day that they fell behind. They only had 17 rushing attempts. You know, it was not exactly the style of play they would want to utilize here, but they came back and they got it done. And you know, this Panthers team is, again, we've talked about it. They seem like a team that would get better as the year goes on with the two new coordinators, and to be able to steal a game like this on the road against a quality opponent is incredibly encouraging.
I agree with you. We talk all the time about Newton, and he's not a precision passer. He's going to miss some throws every game. The flip side of that is you got a great power thrower and a really good just arm talent guy. He part of the reason he misses throws every game is his legs don't always correlate with his arm. But part of that, when he's throwing the ball, but part of the reason he's gotten like that is his entire life he's been able to make some outstanding throws with just that arm. So the incentive, subconsciously, I guess I'm saying, has not been there to develop ideal mechanics. Well, it's not perfect in the big scheme, but in the little scheme, when you're coming back from a game like this, or you're trailing late and you just need some difficult throws, or it's 3rd and long, and Newton's actually struggled on 3rd and long this year, but there are times, and we've seen it at other times, where he's made some big time completions that a lot of QBs cannot make, and to none more so than today.
Yep, and this is really, really good. They end up hanging on. Eagles rallied late. They almost got a game winning score, but the Panthers defense holds on. Eagles, look, they They get Jacksonville in London next week. This is a team that we're all sort of sitting around waiting for them to take control of the NFC East. They are the most talented team in the division, but it's just not happening right now.
They got time. I would not panic. The whole pressure's off thing has made headlines with Doug Peterson telling his guys that. And I don't know if that's true. I don't think the pressure's ever been off any team in Philadelphia ever for any sport. But let's hold tight with the Eagles here.
1-0 in the division. I think that's what you feel good about if you're an Eagles fan this morning, and the fact that you're just probably better than the rest of those teams. Out in London, the London game this week, the 9:30 kickoff, and I apologize to everyone in London, but I hate the 9:30 kickoff. I know all of you prefer it out there, especially those who attend the game, but it makes my life miserable, and I hate the fact that they had a West Coast team playing a 6:30 a.m. body clock game in London in this one. But Chargers, they got out in front of this one. They caught some Titans defensive backs peeking into the backfield, got long touchdowns. Tyrell Williams, 75 yards in the first play from scrimmage. They got a 55-yarder to Mike Williams early in the third quarter. And they just barely held on in this one, though. And we sort of talked about Marcus Mariota versus predictable defensive looks. And Mariota ended up being very good in this game, especially in the second half. Just came up a little bit short. Mike Vrabel opts to go for two after they cut it to 20-19. Did not get the play. The play call was no good, but I like the fact that he went for two.
Yeah,
that's just about all I got
call
in this game.
You got to call that a gutsy call, even though it doesn't work. It was still just as gutsy when he made the call as if it had worked, because at the time, you don't know what it's going to be. Hey, tell me if you understand what I mean when I say this. If Derrick Henry, we're talking Titans now, we're going to their offense.
Yes.
He had 12 carries for 33 yards in this game, long of seven. So very Ezekiel Elliott-like. Gary loves it. If Derrick Henry, let me put it this way. Byron Leftwich, if you took his throwing motion and converted it to a running motion, you'd get Derrick Henry.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of get it. It's sort of a sluggish, slow to start, and then powerful once it gets going.
Yes, thank you. I tweeted that, and I thought, oh, good, this is Twitter gold. This is exactly what Twitter wants. And
yes.
I guess I heard people on Twitter didn't know what the hell I was talking about.
Oh, I don't think people on Twitter try that hard to figure out what people are talking about, but I don't think that was one that was built for Twitter.
You don't?
No.
What's it built for then? It has to be said.
Yeah,
I guess it doesn't have to be said. But
it has to be said.
But it's, why would that not make a good? I don't understand why that's not a good tweet. It's quick. It's a little bit smart, or at least it's creative, and it's a tad snarky. Should I have said Derrick Henry sucks in the hashtag or something? Like, what would I have to do to make that a good tweet, to satisfy these people?
Well, one, there are no good tweets. There's never been a good tweet. Two, it's just you need context behind it. You need to know who your audience. That's what people forget about Twitter. It's mostly like 98% of Twitter is just a giant comment section, and they're not there for insight. Oh, some people are there for like good insight and conversation and stuff like that. Most people are there just to be a bunch of buttholes and just complain about stuff and just try and make themselves feel better about something.
I thought that
by tearing someone else down.
I thought I was tearing them down. I thought I was doing the right thing. It was Derrick Henry's the victim here. What would have made it better is if I'd had a video with it, and I thought that. Oh, you can go find a video on that. It's a lot of trouble. I just clicked play and watched the next play on film. I wasn't even watching Titans film. I don't know how I got to tweeting that. But I was surprised that it was not Twitter gold at the end of the day.
We're going to talk Byron Leftwich at the end of the lightning-ish round here. But, this one was I think it was encouraging for the Titans to – well, I mean, they scored two touchdowns after scoring zero touchdowns the last 2 weeks, so that was a good start. But Marcus Mariota threw a red zone interception, first one of his career. That's the other note in this one. Melvin Ingram made a couple of really good plays against RPOs. Those were
He's
my takeaways from this game.
It's interesting. The Chargers are 5-2. And Bosa has not played yet. And Melvin Ingram is starting to come along, but he really has not been a big factor by his standard this season. So imagine what – I think we're going to get some pretty good – they already played once. They played in week one. We didn't know we were looking at a great one at the time. But we've got a good Chargers-Chiefs game whenever they play again down the schedule here, because I think the Chargers are going to be right there in the AFC West competition.
They do. Bosa's, they have bye week here, and then Bosa's supposed to come back. They were without Melvin Gordon today, so he would presumably be back when they come back to play Seattle in week nine here. But they have a gauntlet down the stretch. They are in December. They are at Pittsburgh, at Kansas City. They have the Bengals and Ravens at home, and then they finish at Denver. So that's look, if it's a team that takes a while to get going every year, if they can hit their stride in December, maybe you get a little bit of a different outcome this season for the sort of perennially disappointing Chargers. Lightning-ish round, Andy. You ready for it? I was so excited I could barely say it. Cleveland-Tampa Bay. Bucks win it in overtime. Chandler Catanzaro misses a kick at the end of regulation from 40 yards, comes back and wins it from 59 in overtime. This was a sloppy game. It was a fun game. Had a lot of weird plays and quarterbacks taking sacks at terrible times on the fringe of field goal range. And I don't know. Nice for the Bucks to get back in the win column.
And they made a change of D coordinator. They put in Mark Duffner and they put out Mike Smith. And I thought not a shot at Mike Smith. I understand why they did it though. I thought they had to do that. They'd become a very passive defense, which made them also a predictable defense, especially against spread offenses. So a chance for the Bucks to maybe get going back in the right direction again here, and it started today.
I will say they were protecting a lead in the fourth quarter, and they got a big fourth down goal line stand, stopped the Browns three straight times from inside the two. And I said, oh, it's a new day in Tampa Bay. And then they ended up going three and out, and then on the very next play, Baker Mayfield throws a touchdown to tie it. So I don't know what to think of that. Detroit at Miami, big day for Kerryon Johnson. Lions really a nice convincing win for them here, and I am fully back on the Lions bandwagon. And Brock Osweiler was fine in this one. He has given them I thought he was maybe even a little bit better than he was a week ago, and this was a I don't know. It was a pretty good week for both teams. I like both these teams, so I feel bad that one of them had to lose, but that's just the way
I like
goes
Kerryon
sometimes.
Johnson. I'm with you on Kerryon Johnson. I like him a lot. That guy moves a lot smaller style than his body. He's a big body that moves like a small guy. That's what I'm trying to say. And to get 158 yards out of him, and then LeGarrette Blount, 10 for 50, a long of 13. So Blount is steadily moving the chains. This is a huge one for Detroit, Gary, and it's against the Dolphins are not great at linebacker, but they've got some challenging interior defensive linemen, and to rush for 248 yards against them, and you're the Lions, and you're trying to establish that identity, and it's been many decades now since you've had it, in some respects, this, I think, will be a hallmark game for Detroit moving forward.
Yeah, this is a nice one. Yeah, Kerryon Johnson, unique talent. That's how I describe him. Vikings go to the Jets. Jets sort of hung around in this one, not quite as lopsided as the 37-17 final would suggest, but things are looking good for the Vikings here, especially defensively. It was more the defense than the offense in this one, even though Adam Thielen did his thing once again. But Vikings are pretty much they're leading they literally are leading the NFC North now, and it's kind of like this is what was supposed to happen.
The Jets were their bright green. I want someone to tweet us and tell me why those bright green uniforms are not 10,000 times better than the dull, dark green that they normally wear. It looks like you need to fix the contrast on your TV when you see the Jets back in their original old green uniforms. I love their color rush light or brighter green uniforms.
No, I'm down with that. Jets and Eagles, for the Jets, it's the old Al Toon, and for the Eagles, it's the Randall Cunningham, Mike Quick, Reggie White
That one I disagree with you on. I disagree with you there, but we're gonna it's the cut line. Fine, we're gonna have to do this, even though it's the lightningest round. I'm the one causing it this time, not you. But remember, the uniforms are relative to each other. There are 32 uniforms in the NFL. If you already have the Jets and Packers as that, I know they're not Kelly Green, but you know they're closer to Kelly Green than they are to dark forest green, like what the Eagles wear, or the dark kind of bluish green. It's too many green teams. The Eagles, I like their uniforms because they're the only team that has that color.
I just think it's a worse color than what they used to use. I think that's the only logic behind it. What looks better?
The it 80s might ones be worse, but it fits. It's worse in a vacuum, but it's better within the context of the entire NFL.
I'll honestly have to think about this. We'll circle back on the deep dive show on Thursday. By the way, in less important news, Xavier Rhodes had a severe ankle sprain, or it seems somewhat severe. So we'll see if he misses any time going forward here. Derek Anderson does not win his Bills debut as starter there. The Colts rolled pretty easily in this one in Indianapolis. I don't know. I don't have a whole lot on this game. Bills really couldn't move the ball, and for once their defense just gave up too many points. You can't give up this many points if you're starting Derek Anderson.
Well, first of all, I wonder, why is Xavier Rhodes' ankle injury less important news than our opinions on the color of the green outfit? I don't know if the Rhodes family will appreciate.
Well, how about lateral move from one to the other?
Fine. This Colts-Bills game, this one's going to look huge in April. When they had the draft order, becomes a big factor.
It's by the way, Marlon Mack, your guy Marlon Mack, had a really big day. 19 for 126, so nice to see that get going. Bills are a quality defense. You know, Colts put up 37 points.
I'm with you. They weren't today, but they are overall.
Want to touch on here. Byron Leftwich is the new offensive coordinator in Arizona. You hung out with him a little bit last summer. Didn't get a whole lot of information out of him, though. He's very guarded.
I did. Yeah, it's the only time I think I've gone in and not been able to extract football information from a coach. Usually I get them to break down and talk even off the record. See, I don't have to write what you tell me. Let's just talk football. And Byron Leftwich would not do it. Now, we still had a wonderful visit. We talked for 45 minutes, so it's not like nothing happened. And we did talk broad concepts, but he wouldn't watch film with me. And I had my film ready to go, and that almost never happens. I don't mind. I respect him for it. He's got his principles. He's real guarded on information. That's just his style. Hopefully he's got some great secrets to keep, because he's going to need them as the OC now for Arizona. It sounds like they're going to go back to more of the Bruce Arians type of offense.
Yeah, you wonder if maybe they just should have tried to bridge that gap a little bit with the,
well,
with
here's,
the new coaching staff.
Here's
anyway,
a problem but with that. Yeah, no, here's the problem with that, though, is Steve Wilks is a first-time head coach, and first-time head coaches who don't have proven coordinators, they put themselves at a real disadvantage for getting hired. I know I probably can't tell you who the coordinators were, but Mike Tomlin, when he was young and getting a job interview, he had a longtime friend. He said, "I'm going to make you my coordinator," and the friend said, "With you know, Mike, I love you, but I've never been a coordinator before. If you use me, you'll have no chance of getting the job at all. You got to go find someone else." And so he went and got Dick LeBeau as his coordinator. So Wilks went to a former head coach in Mike McCoy, but right now Mike McCoy's stock could not be lower. He's been fired mid-season 2 years in a row. He got fired in Denver last year and now Arizona. So his I don't know what's going to happen with his career, and they are going with Leftwich, but Leftwich, it's hard to do a first-time coordinator when you're a first-time head coach.
Indeed. Yeah, we've been hearing plenty about Leftwich in our offices, so I'm very curious to see what happens here. And when I say playing about Leftwich, I mean like for the last 3 years, we've been hearing about Byron Leftwich as like a rising star in the coaching ranks. So we're going to find out. Get our first look. It'll be good.
It was basically all from me that you were hearing that, though, isn't it? And then you guys sent me out to Phoenix, and I said, "Here's the expense bill, and by the way, I got nothing."
that is kind of how it played out. I know there was Bruce Arians was talking about him a lot.
Yeah.
I remember in like when we did the magazine issue in that would have been what, 2015,
Yeah, I was the one that pitched that idea. I pitched that. I said, we got to do Byron Leftwich.
No, but Arians had told Peter separately or something.
I'm pretty sure I beat Peter King to that one. Peter King was always stealing my scoops.
That's how he has done it for his entire 30-something years in this industry, as far as I know. Stealing Andy Benoit scoops, just to be clear. Specifically Andy Benoit scoops. Thing of the week, Andy, what do you have?
Oh, I forgot about it again. You got to do it.
Oh,
I'll start. I'll think of
well,
mine.
You're going to like mine because I'm doing snap infractions. I hated that call so much. I'm really upset that you weren't that you're not here for me to discuss this with and be upset about with. It's one of those things where it's the equivalent of like a defender jumps off sides and then they rule it a false start because an offensive lineman moved a finger or something. It was justifying a defensive player jumping off sides. It was an absurd call. It was in no way simulating the start of a play. And I didn't even care if the kick was good or no good. It was probably my least favorite call of the year so far. And that includes all those roughing the passer calls everyone hated so much. I think it was a made-up, mistaken call, imaginary thing. And it was upsetting to me. And I have no love for the Cowboys. It just upset me.
Okay. My thing of the week would be, you know, Kevin, we didn't talk about in the leadoff game, Bears-Patriots. Kevin White caught a 54-yard Hail Mary, mm-hmm. and they needed 55. I don't think I've ever – I saw it once. Remember the Kissing Your Sister game, the Steelers-Falcons that ended in a tie? There was something similar at the end of that game at Plaxico, but you're a Steeler fan, or you were at the time back then. Do you remember
yeah.
that game?
Yeah,
wasn't there
I do.
Something similar at Plaxico Burress at the end of that? Like, he caught a Hail Mary, but it was a few yards short.
I don't think it was literally at the.
It wasn't. No, it was not.
It was
at
short.
The one like this. Yeah.
Like if I remember that play correctly, I didn't feel like oh he was almost in. It was just kind of like he caught it a couple yards short, and something really weird would have had to happen for him to actually get into the end zone.
Great play by Daron Harmon, and then, forgive me, it was one of the McCourty brothers. I'm sure they've dealt with that their whole life. I don't remember which one it is, Jason or Devin. I think it was Devin. But to keep him out of the end zone there, that was a big-time defensive play there.
That was. No, that was a weird end to a weird game. I thought it was actually for all the nasty things we just said about Mitchell Trubisky in the show. I thought that throw was incredible, and he was getting a little bit of heat from Fouts for coming up short on it, but he had Kyle Van Noy jumping into his face as he was as he was unleashing that ball. I was very impressed by the throw.
I was too. So it was a great throw, and I think Fouts gave. I think he meant they showed the Van Noy replay. I know that. So then they slow-mo'd it. Good play by Van Noy too. That matters. I think they rushed four on that. We don't see that enough either. A lot of times defenses will just rush three. I could be wrong. Maybe it was three. But Claiborne got some pressure on him early, which you're fine with if you're the QB. You move off your spot because you got to do that anyway to set up give your guys enough time to get downfield. Aaron Rodgers, think of all the times he's rolled out by design on those plays, those Hail Marys. But then Van Noy got the second effort of pressure, and that was a big deal. That was a difference on that play.
You were right, by the way. Plaxico Burress was like, that was actually much closer than the play today at the end of that overtime. That was a good call.
Well, it couldn't
Andy.
Be much closer than today. Today was at the 1 yard line. The Burris one was not the one, was it? He got tackled. Didn't he run after the catch or something on it?
Well, he caught it. I'll give you the quick play by play. He caught it sort of probably half a yard out from the goal line and started to fall back and then sort of got pushed back out.
Bursted?
Yes.
Yeah, I remember it differently.
I'll send you the link. I just watched
it
on YouTube.
Sure.
As I fumed over the fact that you will not engage with me on snap infraction.
Yeah, no, as no kids, because he just watched on YouTube. I was giving my big thing of the week there. All right, we got to wrap it up. End the show. That's a horrible way to treat me at the end of the show.
Well, now we're angry at each other. We'll have to make up before we tape the Thursday show. That is a wrap. Thanks to this week's sponsor, the investing app Robinhood. Please support them the way they support us. Get a free stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint to help build your portfolio. Sign up for free at 10things.robinhood.com. That's 10things.robinhood.com. Thanks to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor for making us sound smart. Thank you, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, who makes us sound good every week. Those guys at Cadence 13 are the best. Most of all, thank you to listening. Thank you to you for listening to this episode of the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. We'll be back for the deep dive show on Thursday, and we will have the mini mailbag. We'll probably talk about uniforms. We'll probably talk about snap infractions. I'll talk about snap infractions while Andy fumes. Send those questions, so talkback at themmqb.com. Twitter, Andy_Benoit, ggrambling_si. That's an actual Twitter handle. We're on Facebook. You can get us on Facebook. Jenny Brentson and Connor Orr. Join Albert Breer every Wednesday. And, of course, I will be on the Friday show, gambling show. That is with Jimmy Traina and Scott Grambling. Listen and subscribe to the MMQB NFL Podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, ESA.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys Thursday morning.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.